Hello, everybody. This is Mike Orshan, and today we have Ari Zollberg, and Ari is the director of the International Center for Migration, Ethnicity, and Citizenship at the New School in New York. Hello, Ari. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, Mike. I'm Ari Zollberg. I run a research center on international migration at the New School for Social Research in New York. I'm an immigrant myself. I was born in Belgium and came to the U.S. after World War II. Then I came to the U.S. in 1948. I came to the U.S., I got a scholarship to Columbia in New York and worked my way through there. But we lived in I say we because I had just gotten married and my wife had a teacher's license. So she came down and joined me and she taught school in El Paso for a year at Fort Bliss. So I have a little bit of the feel of the border community.
Could you go into a little bit about the publications about the African refugee movements?
In the 80s, I got together with a couple of other people, a Norwegian woman and a Mexican named Sergio Aguayo, who's now a well-known journalist in Mexico. I think he's got his own talk show on TV. He was just in New York. We had dinner together just recently. The book came out in 89. It took us several years to write the book, to do the research and write the book. It's called Escape from Violence.
And what kind of conclusions were the result of that study?
Well, we try to analyze the different kinds of conflict that produce refugees. And we reach a conclusion that with the spread of independence throughout the worldwide and the emergence of new states, you have to expect when people are kind of thrown together who were never thrown together before in one country, it's like throwing a whole bunch of things together into a stew, and it's going to lead to conflict, so that you're going to have lots of refugees necessarily. And I think we all have an obligation to take care of people who need help.
What I came away with after doing some of the readings, it was the way that countries, not just the U.S., but many different countries, transform themselves by selecting refugees or immigrants, probably would be a better word. Can you discuss that concept a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, all countries, if you think of sort of, you might say, the original nation states in Europe, I mean, they were sort of pieced together mostly by wars and conquests. And, I mean, we now think of the French as being all French, but it was just like a patchwork. And there are Basques and Bretons and so all kinds of different Alsatians. These were very different people originally. We ended up in the same country because a successor of kings made war against each other and consolidated. And the same thing with Britain. If people are thrown together for the first time, they usually have difficulty living together, because they speak different languages or they belong to different religions. And look how long it's taken the Protestant and Catholic Irish to accept each other.
You wrote an extremely popular book called A Nation by Design, and I'd like to go into that a little bit. Is the United States policy for immigration a policy, or is it the will of the people on how the people of the United States want to see their country?
It's always been a kind of a vision of the people who have political power at a given time, the way their vision of what the country should be like, and then try to design an immigration policy which brings that about. So that, for example, in the late 1900s, when white immigrants from Italy and Poland and so on started coming in, a lot of Anglo-American people of Anglo-Saxon origin, so that was really an undesirable development. So they start trying to enact legislation that would block the arrival of those people. And eventually it took them about 40 years to get the design they wanted, but they finally got it in the 1920s. So in the 1920s, the U.S. Applied what was called national origins quota system. Limiting immigration to 150,000 people a year and allocating that 150,000 in proportion to the origins of Americans already here. And of course, people who were the descendants of, I mean, the people who came in the 1700s had many more descendants by 1920 than those who came in the 1890s or around 1900. So the way it came up, this quota system gave preference to people of British origin and German origin because they had come much earlier than others and made it very difficult for people from Southern and Eastern Europe to come. But at the same time, the business community didn't want to do without immigrants. So this national origins quota system was not applied to the Western Hemisphere at all, which remained unlimited. So for at that time, Mexicans were coming in large numbers. So were Quebecois from Canada, who were usually called the Mexicans of the North. I think nobody talks about that anymore. This was in the, I would say, from Mexicans started coming into the U.S. around 1900, when the U.S. started, when the West Coast started excluding Chinese. Mexicans began to come in to replace the Chinese. And then during World War I, there was a lot of encouragement and recruitment of Mexicans. So all throughout the Midwest, not just on the border, but in the Midwest in Chicago, where we used to live, and northern Indiana, all the Mexican communities in the Midwest started during World War I. There was a very two large migrations during World War I. One was Mexicans to the industrial regions of the North and African Americans from the South. Again, even though there was a lot of prejudice, for example, Henry Ford was a racist son of a bitch, but he wanted labor.
When did that stop?
It didn't stop throughout the 20th century, except maybe during the Depression, when a lot of Mexicans were kicked out, just put on trucks and dumped on the Mexican side of the border.
What about the Mexican government? What role do they have in the migration of their people and also creating an economy where their people stay?
Well, Mexican leaders would like their country to be richer and to have enough work for their population. But of course, it's very difficult to achieve that. It's everybody's dream. But I think with Mexico, there are two problems. One is the fact that the birth rate is still very high. So even though Mexico is now really making tremendous economic progress, again, it's a mixed bag because Mexicans now eat American-grown corn because with a NAFTA agreement, Mexico was no longer able to have a protectionist agricultural policy. So a lot of the people who are coming to the U.S. now were small corn-producing farmers who produced sort of enough for their family and just a little bit of cash. But all of those farms are coming to an end now because Mexico is really going through this huge agricultural revolution now. So that agriculture is going to look much more like American agriculture, namely a sort of a huge business, not small farmers. That's finished in Mexico. That's what's really making for the big push for emigration now.
Are these American agricultural firms that are doing this, or are they Mexican companies, agricultural companies?
A lot of American investment in Mexican agriculture, these big Mexican agricultural firms. I mean, this is really an aspect of globalization.
Thank you, Barry, and thank you, the audience, for listening. And please enter comments if you can. And you can find us at www.marsound.com, where there are other interviews as well. Talk to you soon.